Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith and hope with Stephen O'Doherty.
Archives. Archives might seem a bit dreary, a dusty sort of interest perhaps. But thanks to the work of Professor Jacqueline Troy, we have a wonderful and always emerging, changing window into the past via her research into the records held by the University of Sydney, in particular about the early interactions between Australia's Indigenous people and the white settlers. She gave a talk this week. It was called Interlocutors in the Archive. Interlocutor means, you know, people who engage in discussion together. The subtitle was Aboriginal Women and the Collection of Anthropological Data. Professor Troy is a Ngarrigu woman. Her country is the Snowy Mountains of New South Wales. She's a wonderful storyteller, and she's pieced together intimate details of the lives and the language and the knowledge of the Aboriginal women that she's been able to meet in these archives. Now, our culture, the way we tell the story of the Aboriginal people, is shaped by the people who told those stories, and very often they were white men. But you look into the archives and you find details of the lives, the language, the knowledge of named individuals, these interlocutors who worked to help translate their cultural and social world for these white newcomers. And you can look at it as the story of white people finding out stuff about a primitive culture. That's the way we've usually told the story. You can actually also flip your mind and just imagine this for a moment. The story of a people with a deep and rich knowledge and culture and, yes, technology, making their way in a country that was providing for them for tens of thousands of years and having developed very sophisticated cultural language as, you know, cultural beings, sharing that culture with these white visitors who must have seemed very strange to them because they couldn't even grow stuff when they got here. Around the world, this type of flip is starting to happen in the way people think again, revisit, reimagine what happened during these first contact periods. And I'm absolutely delighted we can talk about that with Jackie Troy tonight. It's also, interestingly enough, a time when the National Geographic itself, the magazine, has published an issue devoted to race. And in that issue, the National Geographic has acknowledged its own past stereotyping of native peoples. And it said, we actually gave a nobility to African tribes when we reported on them back in the 1800s, 1900s that we weren't giving to our own black people in the United States who were living amongst us. We lived in a segregated world, but we went out and, in one case, they say, you know, the way we treated the Haile Selassie as a great leader in Africa was completely in contrast to the way we even treated people in our own community as a National Geographic Society and as a National Geographic magazine. It's a really interesting thing to try to flip your mind on these questions. Back to the Aboriginal people and their first contact with white people, I spoke with Professor Jacqueline Troy, Director of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Research at the University of Sydney, and she told me that she's now even, as an Aboriginal woman and as a researcher, she's now even changing the way she thinks about these interlocutors, the people who join together to create new understandings of culture both ways.
I only thought last night I was doing a piece about Aboriginal women and what I've learnt from Aboriginal women who are long gone. These are women I've met in the archives as people who are, they're documented one way or another. Either their images and or texts where they're quoted, all kinds of bits and pieces, artifacts that people made, you know, fishing lines, all kinds of things that are of women's business.
Yes.
I reflected on my own practice and thought, for years I've talked about the Dawes manuscripts, which are the notebooks about the language of the Sydney area produced by William Dawes and other First Fleet officers. And then I realised last night as I was talking and I said to the audience, actually, from now on, I'm going to call them the Batchikarang notebooks, because this lovely young Aboriginal woman back in the First Fleet period actually taught William Dawes how to speak her language and not only taught him but was able to correct his grammar and explain finer points of grammar to him. And as she was learning about what his interest was and how he was learning her language and what sort of ways in which he was writing it down, she was able to give him very sophisticated comment that actually guided his deep knowledge of this language. But it's her deep knowledge that's in there, not really. He's, if you like, the scribe.
And so, start thinking about things that way. There's a whole, you can flip your entire idea about what was taking place then, can't you? What did Aboriginal culture record from those days about its encounter with white people?
Well, again, I guess because I was reflecting on my own scholarship and how I perceive things myself as a young researcher and beginning to publish, that I started to think, well, you take this sort of view of things being like the Deadly Serious Club, you know, everything's
right.
Sort of scholarly, and that Aboriginal people were observing non-Aboriginal people and non-Aboriginal people were observing Aboriginal people, and there was all this sort of sophisticated interchange of knowledge and sharing of ideas about the environment and, you know, the heavens and philosophy and human relationships, all kinds of things. But it's all in this kind of rather sort of scholarly, trite sort of discourse. But in fact, Aboriginal people have never been any different, and I think we've probably spent 65,000 years becoming the funniest people on earth as well. Hilarity. I can imagine the hilarious encounters that went on, you know, that not lost on Aboriginal people just how funny these people were in coming to this country completely, well, not completely ill-equipped, but certainly substantially ill-equipped. You know, I think about a moment in one of the early First Fleet diaries where Aboriginal people were talking about non-Aboriginal, or these Marines going through the bush, exploring. And like, you can imagine these fellows sitting back looking at these Marines going, and they're dressed in full kit, backpacks on, boots, jackets, hats. Right. You know, all this stuff that is going to get caught on every bush that you go past.
Yes.
And not surprisingly, they fall flat on their face. And they, you know, so the Aboriginal people in Sydney used to, this is sort of written up as, and they thought we were terribly funny is what these Marines, the First Fleeters were saying. The Aboriginal people thought we were hilariously funny because we just couldn't cope with this environment. And we kept landing on our face and doing what they said, eating feces because the earth is mulched and it's nourishing, you know.
What
things grow out of. So, but these people are falling flat on their faces, biting the dust, you know. So,
eating the humus, as it were.
So actually, I can imagine in many ways the Sydney mob thought that these people were sent out from somewhere to amuse them as much as anything else. A lot of humour.
And then to see some Aboriginal people taken and dressed in white man's clothes and taken to the United Kingdom as they were must have seemed to the white folk like a rescue. To the black fellow must have seemed, well, I don't know, you tell me, how would that appear?
Well, an opportunity to investigate further. Aboriginal people are nothing if not curious, as all human beings are, but we are particularly interested in other people, and this was an opportunity to go and have a really good look at a whole other group of people, to learn more languages, to learn about the customs of the British. I mean, there's this idea too that it's all this one-way street. The British came here to learn about us and then take over our countries, but in fact we were busily learning about them as well, and we still do. You know, if you look through the literature, the filmic material, you know, the commentary that Aboriginal people are making publicly now all the time, the Uluru Statement of the Heart, all these like grand statements and things, they're actually commentaries by Aboriginal Australians about white policy and laws and people and the ways in which all these people, not only from England but from everywhere else in the world that have come here, treat our countries, and engage with us.
Professor Jackie Troy is our guest on Open House, and she's the Director of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Research at the University of Sydney. Well, there's a retelling of some of the story of the Gadigal clan, which is a part of Australia, part of the sort of First Fleet stuff, isn't it? This is where the First Fleet came aboard, the Sydney mob, at the Australian Museum. Is it helpful to reimagine things in the way that they're doing there?
Look, it's fantastic because it goes to the heart of my thinking that people need to start listening more to us about what we've got to say, not only about our own communities, but in commentating on the rest of Australia. And we have so much to offer as Aboriginal people and as Torres Strait Islander people as well, because peoples, I should say, because we have diverse views. We don't all agree with each other. The Gadigal mob, who was a clan that were first impacted on by Philip landing and setting up camp on their country, which is basically what happened in 1788, January 1788, had a lot to say about what was going on. And as Philip is busy drawing circles in the sand, trying to demonstrate, right, this is our patch now, and that would be your patch over there. And, you know, you could imagine these, especially the elders of the community going, right, these are clearly very unsophisticated people.
Yes, it is hard not to laugh,
and
we're going to
have to train them, you know.
Right.
There was a lot of that, you know, in the record you can see this going on. Yes, look, if you eat that, you're going to die, so don't eat that. So, the Gadigal mob actually did things like help people stay alive. Don't eat that plant. That's going to be very, very bad for you. You're starving. Good. Okay, we can bring you fish. In exchange, we'll have some of those nice metal fish hooks. They are very effective. We'll have a few of them. And, you know, trade starts happening. Aboriginal women become very interested in Surgeon White and his skills at stitching. Anyone who's ever had a baby will relate to that. So, you know, there's all kinds of things that, you know, that the British brought with them that were immediately observed as useful. A whole lot of things were just extremely interesting, you know, dwellings where
yes, but then there was an exchange of knowledge. So there was where to find water, there was how to grow things or to cultivate what was around you. And it is passingly funny to imagine that they nearly starved in the First Fleet for lack of understanding how to cultivate our soil, which is very different from theirs. None of their seeds would grow.
That's exactly right. And in fact, the people who were sent out to Australia with the First Fleet were not particularly adept at farming, most of them. They were more tradespeople type. You know, the convicts were chosen were people who could build things and create, you know, dwellings, set up a camp and all this sort of thing. And farming skills were a bit low down the list, although, you know, of course, the First Fleet arrived with seeds for planting and people who did know about, but as you said, they were not knowledgeable about planting in sandy soil, for example.
Yeah.
And the Sydney mob had been growing all sorts of tuberous roots and yams and, you know, farming kangaroo. Sydney University is actually on a kangaroo ground. It's a slope down to a watery spot where, of course, if you're going to cultivate the local animal population, that's a great place to do it.
Clear the area
so there's some nice grazing land, and then when you need to have a kangaroo hunt, you can chase them up the hill and get them as they go.
And students can be seen chasing each other up the hill to this very day.
Absolutely. No. Too bad we don't have any kangaroo cook-ups these days. But
bit of a shame. Now, this other thing has happened. This is interesting, that National Geographic has decided to come to terms with its own past, which it says was racist.
Yeah, I find that it's a very, very interesting piece that they've written about themselves, that Geographic mob, and fascinating to think that as they were turning the gaze on so many Indigenous communities around the world, that they weren't actually allowing anybody into their fold as members of the Geographical Society who were not really from a sort of Anglo, possibly Celtic. I suspect even the Irish were a bit under suspicion there.
Mm.
So that's really an interesting thing. They've really been quite bold in looking over their own past, but also I think they've done a good job of seating their research and their publication in the historical periods to which it belonged. You know, so this, and by doing that, they're casting a very wide lens on a whole lot of research and thinking that was going on in these different periods. I mean, I think it's 1888 is that the Geographic began.
There's this from the National Geographic in 1916, and this is published by them in their own mea culpa editorial that they've written. They say this, underneath photos of two Aboriginal people, the caption reads, South Australian blackfellows, these savages rank lowest in intelligence of all human beings. I mean, it actually makes me, I'm tearing up as I read it. It's just awful.
Well, it's back to that idea, unfortunately, that still is persisting, that somehow we are people from a very primitive age. Everywhere I travel in the world, people are sort of mesmerised with the idea that Aboriginal people have a technology that somehow is truly ancient. Mm. So in 1788, which is really not that long ago, as we were just talking about the Gadigal people, you can see if you look at pictures painted of Aboriginal women, for example, there's an image of a woman called Killigrant painted by Robert Brown, a convict artist. This woman is walking along and she's an entire socioeconomic unit on her own. She's got her fishing line with a hook attached, and she no doubt made all of it, including the fish hook. She's got a bag, a net bag, that she's put the sort of string handle around her head, and it's down her back, and it's full of looks like mollusks that she's collected. She's got her little water, all-purpose carrier that can carry water if she needs to as well. She's got everything she needs to eat and live well and to feed her community, children, husband, whatever else, on a daily basis. And she's made it all herself from just what she can pick up around her. I challenge anybody now to be able to do that. And I don't see that that is in any way simplistic technology. And people should get along to this Gaddy exhibition before it closes in late March, because you can go and learn how to make, for example, string cord that is going to be superior to any synthetic cord, almost any synthetic cord that you could find. So this is highly sophisticated technology that is not some kind of weird primitive past. So unfortunately, that while the Geographic is kind of fessing up to describing us that way, I suspect there'd be a lot of people who would still describe Aboriginal technology and us as thinkers as being very unsophisticated. And anybody like myself who's got a university qualification, somehow we've given up our Aboriginalness, which is absolute rubbish, you know. It's just that, you know, we've spent 65,000 years also becoming better thinkers. So actually, jolly good. Thank you very much. I'd love to get a university degree, as most Aboriginal people now are thinking in that direction as well. You know?
Well, yes, brilliant. And I'd really thank you for helping us to, in some small way, redress the problem here on Open House. It's always great speaking with you, Jackie. Thanks.
Thank you. A pleasure.
Jackie Troy, Director of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Research at the University of Sydney.
Discover more Open House podcasts at openhousecommunity.com.au.